"That is what I have done," he said, "all my life. My first battle was against the devil."
"You mean temptation?"
"No," he said, suddenly serious. "Lucifer himself."
"Did you win?" I asked. He sat back and looked at me as if I was joking.
"No, of course not. Only God can beat the devil."
In drawing up this history, by which I mean a true account, I have been working from three sources: my own memories, the memories of others, which were sometimes in conflict with my own, and the notes that I took at the time when your father and I started work on what we thought would be a hagiography of his brother, St. Olaf, and then quickly seemed to point towards a secondary work which would deal with his life separately. Over the last 3 months, two of my best scribes have made a complete copy of the original for your library. It was only in the making of the work that I recalled some incidents which needed more explanation or comment. Rather than scrape the vellum clear and delay the sending of this work for yet another season, I have added these as marginalia or inserted extra leaves, whichever proved less troublesome. In a few cases, where it was impossible to know what had been thought or imagined at a certain time, I have followed the example of greater chroniclers, such as Herodotus, who furnished tales that seemed to fit. The places I have invented, I hope these will do the work of history, and that you will not find them too distracting.
Part 1. Norway. Chapter 1. The Battle of Fulford Gate. 20th of September 1066. Outside the East Gate of York. Harald Hardrada. "Here, man. Give me a hand. I will not kill you. Look, men, see what we have found, an archbishop. What a thing to find on a battlefield, and untouched. God is with you, I see. The Lord is not with your army, though. See, your lord, Earl Edwin, has hitched up his skirts and is running for the gate. I do not think he will make it. The one leading the pursuit is Rolf the Bald. Great gangly legs. He never stops, that man. His father was the same. Not a patch of hair once he turned 30. Do you want to stay down there in that ditch? Someone will mistake you for a corpse. They will use your head as a stepping stone. That's it. Take my hand. Come, it's only blood, and it's neither of ours. Push old Red Cloak off your legs. His hour has come and gone. Do you know him? Last night he probably sat on Earl Edwin's benches and bragged how he would throw us back into the sea like fish. This morning, he sat in Edwin's hall and broke his fast, marched along the Scarborough Road, stopped at this ford, and readied himself for battle. An hour ago, he drove off his horse, far back from the battle, clenched his shield grip, crossed himself, and taught the man next to him, bade them be not frightened. And then I came. Poor old Red Cloak. He should have stayed abed. All these corpses should. They should have grown old and tiresome and bored their grandchildren with tales of their youth. Even now this man's wife stands a few leagues away. She stands at the door of her longhouse. The green acres of Northumbria stretch out before her. There is a chill in the wind. The wheat is in, but something troubles her. She does not know if the battle has happened or not. She sniffs, shuffles her worries. Has the Earl made peace? Why are the pigs restless under the beech trees? Where is that boy? Her husband's seed has quickened in her womb, and she thinks of the last two children that they buried during Lent. This new child will be born with the lambs at Easter. Behind her, his daughter is sitting in the light of that smoke hole, learning spindle work. She cannot concentrate because of the two kittens that are pouncing from under her stool. The white-spotted one climbs up her skirts. In the yard, the slave girl picks a blade of dry summer grass from the milk bucket. It fell from her sleeve as she walked, the bucket slopping against her left leg. Watching her from down the field is this man's son. He's sitting with his back to a beech tree. He's angry because he thinks himself old enough to fight, and he resents his father for leaving him behind. "Look after your mother," was the last thing his father told him. And that son fumbles with those words, twists them in his mind like the ends of a straw rope. He picks long grass stems to chew. The outer sheaths are dry, but the inside is still wet and green. The sap is bitter. He chews the ends flat.